discovery of London. That's London Walks Distilled. London Walks makes the new familiar, and the familiar new. That's London Walks opened out like the petals of a rose. This is the London Walks podcast. Sure enough, it's a discovery of London that makes the new familiar and the familiar new. Like London Walks, the podcast is a potpourri and a many-stringed instrument. Every day, there's a Today in London History Bulletin. Friday's a doubleheader, the London History Bulletin and the weekly podcast. Everything from interviews to readings by the two London Walks guides who are professional narrators, to Helena Jones's brilliant analyses of famous paintings, to extracts from London Walks tours, to retrospectives and look-aheads. All done to the London Walks gold standard. Take you places you wouldn't have found off your own bat, show you things you wouldn't have seen, tell you things you didn't know. Make the new familiar and the familiar new. Change the way you see London. Okay, that's the ringing of the tocsin and the writing on the greeting card. Let's see what's in the box today. London Calling.
The funnest one of all. That's how I described this one when I trailed it on Instagram right after I found it. Today in London History, 365 Todays in London History, 366 when a leap year rolls round, and this one, February 27th, wins the jolly laurels, is the one people will take the most delight in. Well, that's my hunch. This project started on December 26th, so we're only 65 days in, 300 days to go, but I'll be very surprised if any of the upcoming 300 days afford more pleasure than today's. That said, you're going to have to wait a minute or two for it, because we've got some stock-taking to do. This will be the 546th London Walks podcast. It's come a long way since that very first one back on March 20th, 2020. We led with our best, Sean doing an adapted-for-podcast version of his Hidden London Walk. Those early day podcasts we saw as little more than extensions of a walk's presence on www.walks.com, or for that matter, the guide's presence on the website. We build them as, you want to hear a bit of this walk? Just click here. Or, meet your guide, here's Sean or Robert or Fiona, telling us a bit about themselves and their walks. In time, we spread our wings a bit. We'd do the occasional interview with a Londoner, or with a walker. And those early days, the podcasts were just click and go. There was no introduction, no branding, as it were. They were just an adjunct to the website. But like all youngsters, the podcast began to develop its own character and temperament. We got around to sticking that introduction onto the front of it. We did a daily one for about 400 consecutive days. Then I hit a wall, had to cut back for a bit. So we were doing them just once a week, every Friday. And then I got the idea for the Today in London History format, and once again we were back to a daily podcast. In fact, it wasn't 7 shows a week, it was 8, because we put out 2 on Fridays, the Friday Special, the weekly podcast, and the daily Today in London History podcast. And now I think we'll push the envelope just a little bit further. Put a rider onto the Today in London History podcast, as well as Today in London History, we'll throw in a brief Today in London amuse-bouche. Might be a London news item, or perhaps giving you a heads-up about something that's going on in London that you might want to catch while you can. Or maybe even giving a special recommendation for a given walk. To put it in newsroom terms, being a London copy taster for you. And I'm going to launch that strand of the London Walks podcast here and now on February 27th with a London news item. This will cheer you up no end. Did me. Just what I wanted to hear. Apparently, London now has rats that can hold their breath for 3 minutes and, in consequence, get into London houses by coming up the sewage pipes, into the toilet bowl, and over the top. It's such an awful thought, you have to laugh. I imagine squadrons of them, sappers in British military parlance, making their way along the main sewer, which runs down the middle of the street. And one of them stops at a lateral, says,
"Hey, you guys, this is a bit of all right. I like the smell of this. I'm going to peel off here. Head up this way. Check this place out. You just carry on, and I'll see you when I see you."
Takes lots of deep breaths, sucks it up, takes the plunge, and like an underwater caver, he's on his way, heading your way. Life in London. Sound good, boys and girls? Anyway, we'll leave today in London, leave Nigel Ratburn, lungs bursting, groping his way toward what he hopes will be light at the end of the tunnel, and praying that there'll be no flash floods coming his way. Leave him and head to a gentler, kinder, funner London. Today in London history. I'd made a bunch of notes about February 27th, but I wasn't overjoyed about them. I mean, the founding of the Labour Party? Give me a break. Yeah, it's important, but come on, banging on earnestly about the founding of the Labour Party? No thanks. Not on the London Walks podcast. So I circled back. It was like drawing to an inside straight. I hit it. Goldie. February 27th, 1965. Goldie was an eagle, a London Zoo inmate, and Goldie got over the wall. Wonderful story. 2 weeks he was on the lam. Newspapers were full of it. Became an international story. There were international repercussions. At one point, Goldie sought diplomatic immunity, and London was spellbound. It was one of those fantastic, accidental, spontaneous, unscripted, make-buzz London occasions. And for students of London, it wasn't just a bit of fun. There was also a serious point or two to be taken on board. London's always loved spectacle, diversion, and drama. And it's got a soft spot for its finny, feathered, and furry friends. And the Goldie the Eagle story hit all those hot buttons. To that, you can add that Regent's Park has always been a London recreation room. So to have the drama unfold there, how perfect was that? Finally, you can also see in this episode what I call London fermentation and effervescence in full flower. You can see it in all the ideas that poured in about how to catch Goldie the Eagle. Great cities are jam-packed with bright people. All those people, all that experience, all that interaction. Ideas come off that admixture like sparks off a blacksmith's grindstone. That's one of the characteristics of a great city. It's what makes London so stimulating. Anything else? Yes, earlier this week I did 2 days in succession on London eccentrics. And then yesterday, it was the founding of the London Zoo. And a day later, today, we've got another London Zoo story. Some mysterious London titular spirit of duality at work there? Somebody trying to tell me something? Weird pairings going to become a defining characteristic of this podcast? Who knows? Anyway, Goldie pitched up, and I was overjoyed. As was London 57 years ago. First time this has happened, but the fact of the matter is, I was thrilled just to read down through the headlines. I was completely hooked. The drama of it. So for starters, that's what I'm going to do here. Read those headlines to you. They're a trumpet blast introducing Goldie. And then I'm going to cherry-pick from the contents of each of those newspaper stories. I'm in awe of the journalists who covered the story. They took wing. Their reports are not just informative. They're imaginative, witty, fun. They turned a Finnish eagle who'd gone AWOL and his Scottish wife and their neighbors into intelligent, gripping, amusing, high-quality soap opera. Here's the tale, headlines first. The Sunday Times, a weekly of course, did three stories on Goldie. Their stories were headlined, Zoo Eagle Escapes, Goldie Plays to Gallery, Zoo Break Law. The Times did six stories. The Times headlines were, Many Ideas for Luring the Eagle, Goldie Kills a Duck, Snowballs and Sauce for Goldie, Second Sunday at Large, Navy May Try to Net Goldie, Eagle Recaptured by Keeper. The best coverage by far was the Telegraph's. It ran 17 stories on the fugitive. The headlines are a treat. They take wing. They positively soar. Here they are, all 17 Telegraph headlines. Day of Eagle Watching by Londoners. Golden Eagle tastes liberty but stays near home. Dog finds out the way of an eagle. Zoo rejects falcons to capture eagle. Eagle thoughts. Goldie flies on and attacks another cairn. How to lure a golden eagle home. Goldie finds that liberty has its drawbacks. Goldie takes in lords on day's tour. Goldie eats a Regent's Park duck. Goldie stays out of reach. Goldie causes traffic jams in the park. Royal Navy asked to net Goldie. Goldie drops snow goose after chase. Goldie no match for keeper's wiles. Goldie's freedom ends in a keeper's arms. What the eagle saw. Finally, a few morsels of content from a couple of the stories. The early ones are matter of fact, but once those reporters get warmed up, it's Katie bar the door. Here's the Sunday Times' terse first report. Goldie, a 7-year-old golden eagle, escaped from London Zoo yesterday. An eluding 14 firemen, 4 keepers, and 1 motorcycle policeman was still free early today. And here's the Times just limbering up. By the time keepers arrived, he was perched on a tree nearby. Earlier, he spurned a dead rabbit with which they had tempted him. During the day, he visited St. John's Wood, Little Venice, and Marylebone. And here's the Sunday Times warmed up. Soaring into the 7th day of his freedom from a 35-foot-high London zoo cage and a hen-pecking wife, Regina, Goldie the Golden Eagle gave every sign yesterday that he was not only enjoying himself, but ostentatiously playing to the gallery. And here's the Telegraph again. This time there are a couple of cute little dogs in the story, making it even more irresistible. He again dived on a dog, a cairn. Another dog of this breed was the victim of his first attack on Monday. As Goldie was always surrounded by a crowd whenever he alighted from a tree, he was easily driven off. Birds of prey are known to have excellent memories for faces and general appearance, and he is believed to have mistaken this cairn for the one he met the previous day. The best story of all, though, was the Telegraph's, headlined, How to Lure a Golden Eagle Home. A searchlight, an electric generator, and 2 fire escapes were brought into service in Regent's Park last night in the latest attempt to get the Finnish Golden Eagle, Goldie, to go home to his Scots wife in London Zoo. It was hoped to lure him back with bright lights and Maud Conn back to the couple's cage from areas in the Inner Circle and Broadwalk, where he has so far been living rough. During the 5 days he has eluded rehabilitation, Goldie has attacked 2 cairn terriers of undoubted Scots descent, like his wife Regina, and withdrawn from a large black mongrel dog, which remained unimpressed by his businesslike beak, talons, or 6-foot wingspan. He has been spotted in Tottenham Court Road, Euston, and Camden Town. But his nights on the tiles in the park suggest more a leaning towards learning, Bedford College in particular, and London University generally, than the West End. After 5 years' married life, he might, the zoo hoped, be glad to come home to his usual meal of rabbit or horse meat. It wasn't as though he was at 7, an old rake of a golden eagle. But when the searchlight went on and he saw a turntable ladder coming, Goldie flew off languidly. Before last night's operation, the zoo had not lacked written and telephone suggestions as to how to lure golden eagles home. Some of these were sending up a balloon baited with thin pieces of meat so that Goldie's talons would burst it and give himself up when the gas escapes from the balloons and he sinks to the ground with it. Using the old poacher's trick of hoisting a long pole 3 feet short of the bird with a tin containing carbide and water attached, this should just make him sleepy enough to fall out of branches without any harm. Burning sulfur under the tree so that the fumes stupefy him, the method used abroad for catching parrots. Shooting him down with a tranquilizing dart. Using a helicopter with a winch, a pole, and lines. Spreading a blanket out on the ground with some bait. The bird's talons get tied up with a blanket. Never fails, said some ex-Indian Army types. Chloroform him up in the tree. A zoo official showed me a telegram from Arnside in the Lake District signed Bird Lover. It said, "Give Eagle its freedom." And two more, both gems, both telegraph pieces. The fashionable Sunday excursion in London yesterday was to the birdwatching in Regent's Park, where hundreds of newly converted ornithologists made pilgrimage to peer and throw snowballs at Goldie, the golden eagle on the wing from the zoo. The fugitive spent his 8th day of freedom in a series of lethargic flights and rests on top of tall trees around the zoo, pursued by press photographers muttering unprintably about the restless nature of large birds. Inside the zoo, Regina, his mate, whom some social workers blame for the whole unhappy affair, and the birds penned in Lord Snowden's bizarre aviary, sulked behind bars because Goldie was attracting so much bigger crowds than they were. Less noble birds circled admiringly around like smaller boys toadying to a bully. Goldie sat motionless, meditating on his matrimonial problems or performing some intricate underwing toilet. Eventually, urchins, bored with inaction, provoked him with whistles, snowballs, cheeky cries of, "We're coming to get you, Goldie!" and started puny attempts to climb the tree. The eagle shook his feathers furiously like someone dancing the Charleston in a feather costume, dropped a suitably pungent comment onto the heads of his persecutors below, and flew off to his next perch. Disappointingly, when he did launch himself from the branch he had been clasping, it was not like a thunderbolt that he fell, but like a leisurely runaway kite. For some time, he sought refuge from the limelight in foreign territory, behind the high fence of the American ambassador's residence. Finally, Goldie's last picnic in the park, his capture, and his reunion with his termagant wife. Goldie, the golden eagle, which achieved international fame in 12 days of freedom from the London Zoo, was recaptured yesterday. He was caught by Mr. Joe McCory, deputy head keeper of birds of prey at the zoo, without even the help of a snare. His capture was a triumph for the bird psychology of the experts. He was caught on one of their food lures, a dead rabbit, as they had predicted from the first that he would be, when he grew hungry enough to take it. He was captured when they had said he would be, in the early morning, before sightseers were around to distract him. At 5:45 a.m., Mr. McCory and Mr. Ernest Scrivener, head keeper, entered the park, and with Mr. Michael Chester, an RSPCA official, laid out their rabbit on a football pitch near Goldie's favorite haunt, the Wild Fowl Sanctuary. They tied a rope to it only to make it move and appear alive. An hour and a half later, Goldie swooped from a tree to dig his talons in his last picnic in the park. Mr. McCrory gave him a minute or two, then walked quietly up and seized his legs, Mr. McCrory had no apprehensions about catching Goldie with his hands. "Eagles don't bite," he said. Like most recaptured prisoners, Goldie was given a good meal on his return to captivity. The remains of the rabbit, followed by a second course of raw beef. Then he went back, slightly subdued, to rejoin his mate, Regina, in their private aviary. It was not an ardent reunion.
"But I hope it's been an ardent listen. Great story, isn't it? Good night from London. See you tomorrow."